Who are these mysterious magi, these wise men from the East? The way that we tell Christmas stories does not seem to remember. They just come out of nowhere. They were apparently studying the stars for reasons unknown to our Christmas stories until they saw one that they call the Star of the King of the Jews. And so they come to where they expect to find that king who has been born, the great city of Jerusalem. It has escaped the notice of many, including many Bible scholars, I might add, that this is not, in fact, the first time that we hear about magi in the Bible. It's not a common word, and it appears in a rather conspicuous place before this passage in Matthew, and that's in the book of Daniel. The wise men in Daniel, who are counselors to King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, are called magi. And Daniel, along with Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, whom we tend to remember by their Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, are forced to join the ranks of those magi when they're captured in Judah and deported with a great number of their people to the east. They're deported to Babylon, where they're made to serve the foreign king who has destroyed their homeland and decimated their people. They're expected to serve the foreign gods of Babylon and pledge their allegiance to the macho image of Babylon's power, to give up their ways over time and to be absorbed without remainder into Babylonian life. But if you remember the story of Daniel, the Jewish magi, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they stand for many of their Jewish people when they refuse to pledge their allegiance to Babylon or be utterly absorbed into the Babylonian elite. And by refusing to give up their Jewish calling, they risk their lives. They risk their lives to remember their God and to remember who they are. And the story of Daniel tells how their stubborn and life-threatening resolve makes an impression on Babylon, even on the royal house of Babylonian kings. Babylonian kings find themselves captive to the Jewish captives. They find the God of the Jews more trustworthy than their Babylonian gods. And the Jewish magi to deliver a wisdom of which the great magi of the East know nothing. By the time of Jesus, centuries later, lands to the East are full of Jewish exiles who have not gone extinct over generations as might have been expected. Instead, their life has made their God known to the kings and wise men of those lands of their exile. So much so that magi of those lands are searching the heavens for a sign from the one that they know as the God of heaven. Magi who remember what the captured magi from Judah had begun to teach them generations before. And so over those generations, they have learned to hope for a king that would emerge from the Jews, a star that would arise from Jacob, not only to free his people from captivity, but to do so by drawing the worship of all the peoples of the world to bring peace. And so in Matthew, we're told that magi have come from the east when they saw the star of this final king of the Jews at its rising. They see that his star has not forgotten the ancient hope of Israel. And now somehow their hope too, that his star remembers. And so they've come to worship him, to bring him the gifts that are fit for such a king. It's really an astounding chain of events over centuries that was all but unimaginable when Judah was falling apart and then being ravaged by Babylon more than 500 years before. That people torn from their homeland and scattered across strange places and peoples would not succumb to the monstrous pressures to just be absorbed over generations and leave no trace of who they had been. That they would not only survive, but leave such an impression on those peoples and places of their exile through such extreme vulnerability that some among those non-Jewish peoples would find their gaze and their hope drawn to the God of the Jews. And that Magi there in the east would remember Jewish Magi of old and be looking for the star of the King of the Jews. Such a powerful witness can only be the work of many Jews like Daniel and Hananiah, Mishael and Azariah. Jews being deported by Babylon to the east can hardly have dreamed that anything so powerful could emerge from their destroyed lives. And yet somehow they lived for such a dream, for such a future. They had inherited a hope that they refused to give up on and then passed it on for hundreds of years, hundreds of often impossible years. Can we imagine living that way? By the hope of something that may not come to fruition well beyond our own lifetimes, say for 500 years? Can you invest your life in a future that you will not live to see? In a future well beyond the lifetime of your own children, or grandchildren, or great-grandchildren, people whose names you do not know and that you will die without knowing? Do you have any imagination for such people? For the place where we live, this San Gabriel Valley, this watershed, this soil, in 500 years? I think that if we're honest, such a life, such a mentality is almost totally alien to people like us. We're rather obsessed with what we expect to enjoy before we die, planning mostly for our own retirement. We have eyes for little else when it comes to the future, until perhaps we realize that death is nearing. And then, after most of our life is done, we think maybe about a few material things that will fall into the hands of those who will immediately survive us. Perhaps you can imagine how this mentality has made recent generations of societies like that of the U.S. so destructive to our places, squandering water, celebrating technological advances that bring ruin to land, to rivers, to oceans, to air. That's what people will inherit from us, among other things, in 500 years. It's the same mentality that succumbs to cynicism in the midst of institutional failure and political breakdown. We find ourselves resolving to do what we can for ourselves and perhaps those closest to us, because we figure that the bigger picture is just beyond saving, at least beyond any concern that we have it in ourselves to sustain. We hardly know what it would mean to live for the sake of those who will reap in 500 years or more what we are now sowing. But that is what many Jewish exiles did. And that is why Magi in the East see the star of the King of the Jews at its rising and come from afar to worship him. I wonder what you imagine living with that kind of a long view would be like. We may be short-sighted enough to think that living for a future so far beyond our own lifespan is a morbid life of self-sacrifice that we just can't bring ourselves to accept. But the stories leading up to this one in the Bible tell us that living by such a hope, such a long view, brought people great joy, made them people who learned how to savor in their own lives the gifts of life that last beyond them. To see life not as fleeting mirages that we chase until we're tired of them and switch to new ones, but as a slow-growing orchard that we spend our whole lives learning to love and die before we're finished. I hope you'll start asking yourself today, if you haven't been already, what people 500 years from now will inherit from you, from the way that you are living now, from what you are laboring for today, from what you're wisely trusting God to do with your struggle. And to consider how asking yourself that will not make you less attentive in the present, but more so, because you learn to see life in the present as a fruit of a long past that's only partly traceable, and at the same time, the seed of a future that you can only vaguely discern without yet being able to see it. That way of discerning what we can barely trace and cannot yet see is what the Bible calls faith. Well, when they reach Jerusalem, as this drama, I think, is so beautifully portrayed, Magi from the East, driven by the power of a star that they say is the star of the King of the Jews, they're cause for panic in the king who currently rules over the Jews. He's had no intelligence of this threat to his throne. And here it is on his doorstep, coming from the heavens, from way beyond his reach, and no doubt igniting the hopes of many of the Jews suffering under his oppressive rule. People in Jerusalem know what such a threat to King Herod means, the violence that he will unleash and the unrest that it will bring. And so they're as frightened as Herod is. As the story tells us, Herod finds himself forced to decide his policy going forward by consulting sacred books that he obviously doesn't believe in, but that the people he wants to control do believe in, and so he can't afford to ignore. He sends the foreign dignitaries from the east to the prophetic city of Bethlehem, perhaps hoping to confirm where and who this revolutionary child is, before alerting the child's supporters that he's being hunted and have him slip between his fingers. But then it is not Herod's orders that guide the Magi, but the star of the king. The star had not kept them from going to Jerusalem, despite the fact that the king they sought was not there. Maybe the star wanted to let them go there. But now, after apparently being invisible to them since its rising, the star of the one born King of the Jews suddenly appears and guides them straight to where the child Jesus was, and we are not told where that was. We're told only that they reach the place to which the star leads them and are filled with immense joy. That they find Jesus with his mother, worship him, and deliver their royal gifts, and then follow a dream instead of King Herod's orders, keeping Herod from learning Jesus' whereabouts. The Magi were not cynical people. I don't know about you, but if I'm honest, I find that there is much to be cynical about this epiphany of 2020. To take what is probably the most glaring instance, we are living, not unlike the people we have read about in Matthew this morning, under a political regime that is terrified of losing power, that will shoot first and think later, that will trample whatever feeble legal institutions of restraint were in place to fuel its own dominance and control. Just as Herod went on to tear children from the families of Bethlehem because of what they could become, because of what they represented, to make an example of them, the current political administration of the United States will kidnap children from their parents and cage them because of what they could become, because of what they represent, to make an example of them. And it's this regime that does all of this dressed up in a certain kind of Christian clothes, winning the applause of embittered Christians for its bluster, maintaining the quiet support of more measured Christians who justify it with what they think are economic gains. Christians turning a blind eye and a deaf ear to the people and places that are preyed upon by this macho regime, because they're committed to winning a political game of fools. It's a political culture of cynicism, one with no vision for international peace or justice for the exploited and the endangered. Instead, short-sighted ambition for what we can get while we can. Well, you cannot fight cynicism with cynicism, just as you cannot fight hate with hate. And so let us follow the risen star of the just King of the Jews and the Magi who were guided by that hope for generations and then guided to that King himself by the light of his star. We must follow the dreams that God gives us rather than the dictates of tyrants or our fears. And we must resist cynicism and cynical governments with a steady eye on a future that is beyond the horizon, with a vision of community that we may not be sure how to bring about, that may not be appealing to people who are embittered and fearful and hungry for vengeance and for winning, but is worth struggling for and living for precisely as a life that is beyond our own reach. A life that people and places 500 years or more beyond our lifespan will enjoy because we did not give up on it in our own lifetime. That mentality of faith, of hope, is why there were Magi who came from the East to worship Jesus as the King of the Jews, with all that that represents. Our own lives today are full of countless gifts that we owe to faithful people like them, who lived 500 years or more before us today. We're called to be people who remember and who hope. And we will find that as we are, we will experience what those Magi from the East experienced when they were led by Jesus' star to the place where he was. What did they find? They found immeasurable joy. And that is the cure of cynicism and the power of a sustained struggle for peace joy. Amen.